anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
Hello, welcome to Anomaly Supplemental. This is Casey.
This is Sue.
And we're here to talk about this episode of Anomaly. It is Sue's panel about Xena. It was its 20th anniversary recently. Sue, what would you like to say about this panel?
That I can't keep up the NPR.
We tried.
Oh, man. I was laughing so hard. Love it. Yeah. This was the 20th anniversary panel at Dragon Con for Xena, fan panel.
Originally, today's release was supposed to be about Why the Last Man, but I just couldn't get my hands on all of the copies of Why, so we're postponing that.
There were some library issues.
Libraries can be dumb sometimes, like pets, which is why I still love them.
The bureaucracy of libraries can be dumb. But so, yeah, this Xena panel has basically consumed my life since maybe mid to late July, when I got confirmation that I was on this panel. In, you know, again, mid to late July, I decided that I would rewatch Xena, all 6 seasons of Xena, before Dragon Con over Labor Day weekend.
Girl, you are insane.
It was difficult. Don't try this at home.
You really should. I mean, we messaged back and forth, and you basically said, I don't know how I'm going to be able to do this all. I have at least until the Monday before the panel.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've been trying to make you write a post about it, too. So hopefully that will happen.
There will be a post, a blog post about Xena.
Yeah.
But also on this panel with me are some awesome people. There is Jessa from GoodToBeAGeek.com, who also occasionally appears on the RevCast, and who we have interviewed some of the hosts of the RevCast because they are also the directors of the American Sci-Fi Classics track at Dragon Con. There's so much interconnectedness. Also on this panel is Tegan of justtegan.com, and she's on Rev News. And Keith R.A. DeCandido, who might be a familiar name because he is one of the authors of some of the Star Trek tie-in novels. So it's a fun panel, I think.
Yeah,
Do you like it?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I haven't watched Xena in years, but I loved how it embraced its campiness. And Lucy Lawless is beautiful.
Yeah.
And she continues to be beautiful. She's kind of like Bernadette Peters in that she doesn't age.
Mm-hmm.
You all had a lot of interesting things to say about the female characters in this show and how it was very, you know, female positive.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the author that you mentioned also wrote a Young Hercules book,
mm-hmm.
I think. And it featured Ares, who I shipped with Xena when I was a kid. Like,
so
hardcore.
Lots of people.
Lots of people. Unless they shipped Xena and Gabrielle.
Like lots of people.
Like lots of people. Xena was shipped with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Because she was amazing.
And never shamed for it.
Not at all.
So, that's all really just an intro to the panel. The end.
Well, here's what's coming up on Anomaly Supplemental. First of all, Moment of Who is coming back. We're going to be discussing the first 4 episodes. We're going to discuss Why the Last Man. And Sarah will be discussing Babylon 5. There is no particular order for this.
Yeah, I was going to say, that is not the right order.
not at all. It's going to be a surprise and you're going to enjoy it.
Just like we hope you enjoy this paddle.
Da 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 da.
Let's get this party rolling. I am apparently the designated moderator for this crazy train ride. Awesome! All right, so welcome to the American Sci-Fi Classics track. If you go on the app, you can rate the panels. You guys know that, right? So when we're done here...
See, I try not to tell people that.
Yeah, when we're done here, you just very nicely rate it 5 stars if you like it. If you didn't like it, rate it 5 stars. And if you have any...
They'll be able to tell the difference.
Yeah, it's cool. Like, they'll know which one's which. It's fine. If you have any suggestions for next year, anything you want to bring up, you know, send in your feedback. The powers that be are always listening and always bringing us new content.
Where are
So, welcome.
Getting me a sandwich.
The powers that be are getting her a sandwich. It's great. That's why I'm doing this spiel. Yeah, I don't know.
And then if you want more input or if you want to do this crazy train ride all year, join the Facebook group.
Yeah, the American Sci-Fi Classics Facebook group. Yeah, we are hilarious.
Be warned that there will be lots of funny links posted by Joe Crow relating to Manimal. That is the downside of joining the Facebook group. The upside is there's all sorts of other cool things going on, and you can always block Joe. I've known Joe for 20 years. I can do that.
Yeah. So welcome to the 20th anniversary panel on Xena. Seriously, has it been so long? It was like yesterday.
Hi, we're all old. Yeah.
I like to think of myself as more experienced.
So, Mike wants to know if you started.
Oh my God, sorry. I was doing the opening introduction and now it turned off.
Mine.
Have you started yours? Well, you're good. Why is it off? Sorry, technical difficulties. It turned itself off. All right, it's not my fault.
I'll talk to Sue later.
All right. Yeah, Sue got it. All right, I give up. Technology.
Too many people in this room know each other.
Okay. I think it's recording now.
We can only hope.
Yeah, so again, welcome to the 20th anniversary Xena panel. We're going to start on the left to introduce our panelists for the day.
That would be me, I guess.
Yeah, okay. You starting.
Okay. Hi, I'm Keith Henry DeCandido. I've written a metric buttload of fiction, some of the recent, which is The Klingon Art of War, a story in the new X-Files anthology, Trust No One, as well as my short fiction collection, Without a License. Note the lovely caricature of me on the cover. That's me with the red nose and the hat. And I'm on this panel because I have actually, besides being a huge fan of both Xena and Hercules, in fact, I was on the first Dragon Con I came to was in 1998 when there was a whole track for Hercules and Xena, yeah. And I did a bunch of panels on that. I also wrote 2 Young Hercules novels that tied into the Ryan Gosling series. That was when I lasted for 1 season, and I wrote a short story for The Further Adventures of Xena Warrior Princess, which was an anthology Ace Books published in 2001. My story was called Recurring Character, and it was about a guy who keeps getting hired out for different jobs, and no matter what job he gets hired for, he winds up being one of the 15 guys Xena beats up over the course of the He even moves to Rome, and then it's one of the times she showed up in Rome, and he still gets the crap kicked out of him every time. So that's why I'm here. Anyway.
All right. My name is Jessa Phillips. I run GoodToBeGeek.com, where I write and podcast about all things geek-related, including Xena, as well as, I'm not going to say feminism, but gender. As well as gender and race in fandom. So that's why I'm here.
I am your moderator today. My name is Tegan. I have a website, JustTegan.com. I am also the newly designated co-host for the Revolution SF Rev News podcast. I grew up on Xena. She was like one of my all-time heroes as a younger female type person. I'm so, you know, chuffed a bit to be here talking about Xena.
Hi, my name is Sue. I am a podcaster. And you can hear me on Anomaly Podcast, which is General Geek Topics, and also the Parsec Award finalist, Women at Warp, which is a feminist Star Trek podcast. I will say feminist, and I will say it loud. It is a feminist Star Trek podcast. Also, I have cats. If you don't understand why that's funny, you weren't here in time.
I have cats too.
Yay, cats!
I
had a dog, but he died.
Aww.
It's okay, he was 15 years old.
Way to bring the room down.
Sorry.
Wow. Okay. So,
she brought up cats.
She brought no, don't blame the cats. Okay.
No, I'm winning soup.
Okay. So,
look how cute they are.
Sue, put it away. All right, so let's start this off with, like, what is your, like, first Xena memory? Like, what, you know, what kind of, like, pops into your head when you're like, yeah, Xena, going back in my mind? Like, what
is Jockster the Mighty.
Tegan, before we get started, can Marilyn take a picture of the whole group so she can send it to Mary D's site?
Sure, absolutely. Please stand by.
Who knows about Mary D? Anybody?
Nobody knows Mary D.
It's a huge fan site in Australia.
Yeah, okay. Oh, that one.
Okay.
Based in Australia.
Based in Australia, yes. It's they don't call it the World Wide Web for nothing.
Shall we say now that we'll ask the cosplayers to come to the front at the end of the panel?
Yeah, at the end of the panel. Yeah,
hang out over there.
Because there's some amazing.
For those listening at home, there's a whole gaggle of people over here in Xena cosplay. We got a Xena, we got a Joxer, we got a Gabrielle, we got an Ares, and we got a bunch of others wandering around here as well.
Yeah.
And I didn't see it. I'm sorry, I didn't see the Kalisto.
After about row three, we can only see your faces.
Yeah. So. Yeah, seriously, it's like, it's just a sea of heads over here, so I didn't... Yeah. I thought you just had, you know, cool blonde hair. But
first memories.
What?
First memory.
Oh, first memory. Oh, but first memory of Xena was... I mean, I was watching Hercules already when the two-part episode that introduced the character aired. That's really basically my first memory of her and of the character, and she created quite the impression, to say the least. But that was really it. Sorry.
All right. Let's see, language, it's early. I also was introduced through Hercules. But I was so excited, like, finally. And then to know that it was going to be her own series, just elation. It's like, finally, here's a character that you absolutely wanted to know more about, and she already had... such a complex story you could tell. So I was really excited to find that finally we were going to get a female-focused story where she already had an established backstory that they could already explore.
Yeah, that was, again, you know, it was so great that they introduced her in Hercules and made her such a great kind of complex foil for Hercules, who is like the do-gooder at heart. And you have this wonderful, multifaceted layered character. But what I really remember about watching about Xena, like the first thing that like I can really glom onto, is the second episode where she has that moment where she's trying to like join. I think it was the second episode, or the first or second. I rewatched them like, well, we watched half of the series. I kind of ran out of time before I came to this, and it was the episode where it's early on. They had that wonderful chariot race at the end of the episode, she's having that moment with the farmer, and he has to cauterize her wound, and like that is the first like thing I remember about Xena. That great scene where she's like, nope, just take it, just we're doing it right now, and you're like, she's hardcore. What? Yeah, that's how I will always think of Xena. Like, what? Which is the first of many times wounds get cauterized on that show.
I don't think of a scene, yeah, right, other than truly the Joxer the Mighty song. I think of, like, the experience of watching it growing up. This is going to sound like the weirdest thing. My dad is retired now. He was a Baptist minister. And my friends and I... No, it's fine. Not like Westboro, like rational people. So the shows, Hercules and Xena, were on Saturday night.
Right.
Sunday school class was actually, let's talk about Hercules and Xena for an hour before the church service.
Nice! Right.
I'm so glad my dad doesn't listen to podcasts. He doesn't.
Okay, so now that we've kind of gotten through that, let's talk about one of the great overarching themes of the show, redemption. So one of the things I noticed when I was rewatching it is, again, Xena is kind of searching for a way to make up for all of the crap she did in the past, which was a whole lot of crap, man. And I liked how there were a lot of other characters that kind of tied into that, like, to a certain extent, in the later seasons, Kalisto tries to go that route. So when you think of the kind of redemption arcs that happen in Xena, what comes to your mind, Sue?
I watched all of the show in the last 5 weeks. So I'm thinking backwards in it, right? So I'm... When you say she did all kinds of stuff, it just brings me back to that they keep adding on to that backstory, especially when it kind of goes off the rails in 5 and 6. And, like, she was a Valkyrie?
Yeah.
Okay. She was a demon, too? Okay. But, I mean, I guess the moral of it is there's really nothing you can't come back from. And that's really powerful. You know, if you are really, to use a, I guess, religious-y word, repentant, if you are really sorry and you really do want to change, that there is nothing you can't come back from. There is nothing you can't change. And the great thing about Xena is that they don't try to erase the past. They make it really clear that this is a part of you and this is what shapes you, and that is a good thing. You shouldn't ignore something that's a part of you, but it informs how you then go on to live your life.
Yeah, definitely. They had that wonderful episode, the Nemezine, where Gabby kind of fights through her memories, and you know, and she has that choice at the end. Do you want to forget all the painful things? Do you want to forget your past? And she's like, if I forget that, I forget everything that came from it, all the good stuff that came with those terrible memories. And then later on, there is that wonderful episode with the Urn of Apollo, which is one of the last ones I watched before I ran out of time. And, Tara, who is the teenage sidekick sidekick wannabe, who I swear I just want to strangle most of the time. I think that's a fairly, you know, fair thing across, like, yeah.
Until she learns to dance
and has Footloose.
Yeah.
So, but there's that great moment at the end of that episode with the Urn of Apollo and everyone's getting their kind of like moment of like forgiveness, like, you know, let's put the whatever was in the urn on your forehead. And Tara and Gabby look backwards at the doorway where Xena's standing, and Tara's like, doesn't she want to be forgiven? And I was like, that is such a great, very telling moment about Xena as a character. She doesn't want some magic forgiveness. She doesn't want you to just wave your hand and say it's all okay. She wants to earn that.
There was one of the, I was not able to do the research, so I'm depending on 20-year-old memories here. But part of the reason why I wasn't able to is because I've been doing rewatches of various Star Trek and Stargate shows for Tor.com twice a week. And for Stargate, I've been doing it as a seasonal rewatch, so I have to kind of jam watch everything at once. And the reason I'm mentioning this is there's a scene in one of the Stargate SG-1 movies in The Ark of Truth where Teal'c is talking to Toman, and Teal'c is somebody who, like Xena, has an ugly past working as basically the chief henchman for a bad guy who killed a lot of people. And he's talking to Toman, who has just basically done the same thing. He's just repented after being the chief henchman for the bad guys. And he's telling him, other people will say they try to forgive you and understand you, and that doesn't matter. You need, you know, you will try to forgive yourself, and you can't. The only thing you can do is try to save lives where once you took them. It is one of the crowning moments of awesome for the character, and it's also, and it perfectly nails what Xena was doing also. You know, she doesn't, external forgiveness is nice, but that's more about the people doing the forgiving than it is her.
Yeah.
Which is why the Urn of Apollo was held no appeal to her, because that's not where the redemption was going to come from. The redemption was going to come from her doing everything she could to reverse those actions. And that was a quest that she was never going to fulfill, but she was always going to try to. And that was the strength of it, was that, you know, she can't make up for what she did completely. That's not really possible. And she knows that, but she's going to keep trying anyway. You know, she's still going to keep going for that ideal, because the struggle to do so was what mattered. And what I especially loved about the show was the way Lucy Lawless played it.
Yes.
She was a remarkably, and still is, a remarkably subtle actor. You know, she never... I mean, she had her moments of over-the-top, God knows. It was still Xena, but when it called for it, you know, just the subtle changes in her facial expression could speak volumes.
Well, I'm not going to harp back on Xena's redemption story, but I'm going to touch back on what you said, Tegan. And what I love is that it does, while it is overarching her redemption story, the fact that we get to bring in all these other characters and the characters that we meet along the way also, that also have to have some sort of redemption in their own lives, and how she gets to then inspire or help them to achieve their redemption. That's what I truly love. And I don't mind that it goes on for 6 seasons either, that she's always questing for this. It never feels like, while that is her primary motivation, it's never a desperate grab for redemption. It's always about, you know, making that kind act, helping somebody else to find their path, and then that better informs who she is.
Oh, awesome. So speaking of the characters that we meet along the way, let's start talking about some of the other people that we encounter. Let's just start with the obvious, Gabby. Let's just have a little chat about Gabby, who many contend and in some ways rightfully so, most ways rightfully so, that is the true love of Xena's life. Here. In all things, Xena and Gabby forever. But let's talk about the kind of fascinating journey she takes, starting from her farming past.
I love they move her character along so quickly and make it that she's not just tagging along. Yes, she's tagging along, but what is it? Episode 3, and she's an Amazon princess. Thank
yes.
you very much. She's not just the sidekick. We've given her her own set of action. Yes, she is on this journey, but I think she would have taken that journey anyways because she so desperately wanted to get out of Protea. Yeah. But I love that automatically it's not just about, well, let's tag along with Xena's adventures. It immediately makes her part of the story.
I think you see her strengths right from episode 1, you know, and what I really love about Gabrielle is that they take this stereotype of femininity, of this jabbermouth, essentially, somebody who can't shut up, and they make it Gabrielle's superpower.
Yeah.
In episode 1.
Yep.
She can talk herself out of anything. That is taking that stereotype and turning it on its head and making it really, really important. She can talk her way in or out of anything.
And just, while the story was very much about Xena's redemption, it was also about Gabrielle growing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, her maturing process and the changes she went through were as much an important through line of the show as Xena's redemptive arc was. And she's also very much, I also like, just as somebody who is a writer, I appreciate that aspect of the character because she acts like a lot of writers I know, like me. And just that whole idea that you know, wanting to tell the stories. And also, yes, being able to talk her way out of anything, you know. Especially, it's a hard thing to pull off, and I think one of the reasons why they did the Amazon Princess thing was because whatever else one say, both Hercules and Xena had a very specific formula they were following, and that included at least 4 fight scenes per episode, whether they needed them or not. And there were only so many times you could have Gabrielle hiding under the table while Xena does all the fighting.
Yeah.
So they eventually had to give her, and I like the fact that the skill they gave her was involved staff weapons, which is at least less overtly.
Yeah, she does bashing damage instead of lethal.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
But then I like how they progress that also. Well,
and that's why
seasons.
It's such a big deal when she does have to take life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Because that's not something. Yeah, that's something else. For Xena, that's old hat.
Right.
But, sadly. But that's, that was part of her growing up as well. Or not.
Oh, you see it too when she gets caught up in things. Like, she gets caught up in the Eli's religion,
right?
And, you know, you can, I've heard people say, oh, well, it's inconsistent, or it's somebody growing up. Mm-hmm. Like, you find a thing and you get really into it for a while, but then you realize that maybe it's not perfect. So you take what you can from that thing and apply it to your life in the way that you can, and take all of your experiences together are what can help you live your best life. Did that really come into my brain?
But I loved it.
You know what I mean.
And I don't know that it was planned to be that late in the series or not. But I love that the Eli storyline does come so much later in the series as a whole, because I really like how they play Gabrielle in that, because she's always sort of questioning. Like, that was always her ideal, to live that life of love. But she always has that doubt, having all of that past history with Xena and seeing so much of the world already, that, you know, she really wants to believe, but she always questions, is it really for her, until she finally has to make that decision that this is a great ideal, and yes, it's something that I will strive for, but that's not the life we lead.
Yeah, I thought that was, again, very interesting, kind of comparing it to the very kind of early on when you run into Craftstar and the starting of the Dayhawk storyline. Because Craftstar, yeah. Can we at least appreciate that they reuse such fantastic actors over and over and over again in the show? Like, yes. Martin Chokash, I mean, seriously, that man, I would watch him do anything. Like, especially, like, but he was such a great, you know, this is all about love, and everything's going to be great, because I've pegged you just right how I want to use you. And then you get into the Dayhawk storyline, you're like, damn it, but yeah, I like how they kind of pulled that in, and I can see where it lends to the doubt that she has later on with Eli, because she's kind of been burned by this before.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, legit, literally. I always am very fascinated by the evolution of Gabrielle's style throughout the story. Because you start with this wonderful, she's got this great strawberry blonde hair, nice, very red, and, you know, she's got like a jacket, like a cardigan almost, like a long skirt. Next to, like, the skirt starts getting shorter, the top starts getting smaller, her hair starts getting blonder.
When they do the like, producers episode,
right.
And they're making the musical.
Yeah.
And she makes that comment, like, every time you come onto this stage, this top gets smaller. There is so much meta goodness in that episode.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
Her Kinsina really elevated the clip show, I think.
That's something I noticed.
Supposed to be a money saver, showing flashbacks, and they wound up doing these wonderful framing sequences that really just were even over the top, even by their standards.
Where are we gonna go next? Let's see. We talked about Cammy. We can talk about. Let's talk about Joxer for a bit.
I don't know if Sue will want to talk about him.
I just like the song.
I think it's really kind of important to talk about Joxer, because he's this wonderful bumbling character, and he tries so very hard, and he's not very good at
anything.
And
good loyalty.
He's good at loyalty.
He's
totally Hufflepuff. Hufflepuff from a family of Slytherin.
Yes.
So I
liked it better when they took Joxer seriously as a person, which they didn't always.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't take him seriously as a warrior at any point, but that was sort of the point of the character. But it was too often they just relied on him as the cheap comic relief crutch.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, and I can't remember specific episodes now, but every once in a while they let him be, you know, the loyalty in particular, and his willingness to be there for his friends, even if there wasn't anything he could actually do, really, but he was there for them. And Ted Raimi is also just a much better actor than that part let him be, for the most part.
Yeah.
Which is why I really liked it. I actually really liked older Joxer that we got to meet briefly before they killed him.
Yeah.
Because you know, the sort of bitter, miserable Joxer.
I loved when he fell in love with Gabrielle, right. And you have those wonderful moments of heartbreak where he realizes that she's never going to feel the same way for him as he feels for her. And you can see that in his performance. Again, this is the comic relief, and you're sitting there going, "I, my feels have been stabbed repeatedly now. Thank you."
But you know what? That led to one of his best scenes. When after he makes the confession, after he says to Gabrielle, "I love you," and then a little bit later, he's like, "You know what I said before?" And you think he's going to take it back, or "I didn't mean it." All he says is, "You don't have to reply. It is what it is. No response needed. I just want you to know that I love you." That is so powerful.
Yeah.
But I agree. I like when it comes to the point even where Xena actually trusts him to carry out part of the plan.
Yes.
You're like, oh, thank you. Because he will do it no matter what. Yes, he may bumble along the way, but he will get the job done at the end. And that even in the end, he's the one that sort of protects them until he really thinks that all hope is lost. And that, in fact, they are dead. That's so sad. Yeah. But he is there up to the end. Mm. He's there for the long haul, even if he is friend-zoned.
No such thing.
Yeah, that's a whole other discussion. So let's see. I want to talk about my favorite god right now.
Aries.
Yes.
So let's Kevin Smith. When I heard the news that Kevin Smith had passed, a thought occurred to me is I hope it's the director. Because I'm going to admit that, because I was like, you can't take this pretty man away from me, universe, you are so horrible. And then I found out it was actually the actor, and all hope was lost. And
I was especially disappointed because I wanted probably Dragon Con or Comic Con or San Diego Comic Con or somewhere to invite both of them and have them do a panel together so that we could have the matter antimatter explosion.
But I like his evolution, actually. Yeah, it was, again, you know, when you first encounter Ares, the character in the Herc Xenoverse, he is like this disembodied voice and then eventually we get this fantastic performance by Kevin Smith.
In that first episode with the worst fake beard ever.
Yes, the worst fake beard ever.
Thank God he grew a real one, because damn.
their hair and wig department was not great.
No.
So many mullets in that show. So many.
Although, to be fair, that wasn't Lucy Lawless's natural hair. She's a blonde.
Yeah, she's a, yeah.
So they did her hair, but everybody else.
But like the future episodes where they're like clearly synthetic wigs, and you can see their hairlines from under the wig. Like, it's not good.
But no, Ares, you know, you start out with Ares, and it's very clear he wants Xena back on the side of war and death and everything that is martial and good in that realm. Good being a subjective term. But then you kind of, the more he ends up spending time with Xena and trying to convince her that she really needs to come back to him, the more he realizes that I actually kind of like her as a person, not just as a warrior. I respect, you know, I respect her choices. I might not agree with them. And you're sitting there going, this is not something I expected from you, Ares. And now you're like in love with her, and I am so confused, and so it's hot. So
I loved the complexity he brought to the character,
yes,
too. There were so many different elements of him that were, you know, different sides of it. We, and in particular, there was one episode, I think it was an episode of Xena, but it was a crossover episode, so it was both Hercules and Xena together. I think it was an episode of Xena. It involved Zeus also.
Yeah.
There was big confrontations and such. Might have been an episode of Hercules. I don't remember. Roy Dotrice was playing Zeus.
Yeah.
It was one of the times he played him. And we got, and Ares was part of it, and we got to see both the Ares who was in love with Xena and the Ares who is bitter because Dad always liked Herc best. Which were the two main elements we got to see, and usually we only saw one or the other depending on which show he was on. And seeing them both in the same episode was great because he didn't change anything. He was still Ares.
There was the episode where he bonded with the dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or he might be a farmer after all.
Or the episode where he bonded with Gabrielle and they had these wonderful wonderful moments together.
Yes.
And I think that was the scroll enchanted one.
I think he's like
that was the first time I started liking you. This is getting weird now, isn't it? Yeah, it's
kind of
weird.
What about when he was the god of love?
Yeah, when he was the god of love.
Oh, he played that beautifully.
Again, like
he was an amazing actor. He I actually got to meet him. I did the two Young Hercules books I did had Ares in them, and one of them had him on the cover. And I got to give him copies of the book, and I found out I saw him at one convention in November in Pasadena, gave him the books, he said, "Oh wow, that's great. Sweetest guy in the world." All the New Zealand actors are sweeties, actually.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know, some in the water over there or something. And
we're not in the water.
3 months later, I saw him again in New York at another Herc and Xena convention, and he told me he'd been reading the books with his kids, because they were YA books. And his parents were thrilled, his kids were thrilled, "Hey, look, Dad, you're on the cover!"
So cute.
And writing that character was so much fun! Oh my god, that obnoxious characters are always fun to write anyway, just as a general rule. And especially obnoxious characters who don't give a damn what anybody thinks about them, because he's a god, what the hell does he care? You know? But that was one of the great joys, was being able to write that character, because he imbued him with such a wonderfully snotty, complex character.
Again, he wasn't just this one faceted god of war all the time.
Yeah,
you know, there was a lot of depth beneath those, you know, beautiful black curls.
And it becomes that dependent relationship that he doesn't have with anybody else. I mean, certainly other women come along and want to take Zena's place, including her daughter, but whatever, that's a whole other storyline. But that it always does come back to, you know, he really feels they are meant to be together, and it does create that everlasting triangle.
And it's a good symbolism of... The character served as a good symbol of her redemption. Because he's basically doing the Emperor Palpatine thing of trying to bring her back to the dark side.
And then as we talk about how much, you know, he has that bitterness towards his father, then to later see, you know, as close as the family is, really not. But he still really does care about family. I mean, after everybody is gone and it's just him and Aphrodite, that he will do whatever he has to save Aphrodite as well.
Yeah.
Still have that softness in another way outside of his relationship with Zena. I like that they included that as well.
Actually, one of my favorite... This can be self-indulgent for a minute.
Okay, be self-indulgent.
But there's a line in the Young Hercules books where he's talking... An Amazon tribe that worships him has been kidnapped, and he's talking to Hercules about how, I have a responsibility to my worshippers. That's my job. And Aeolus mutters, gee, I thought going after Hercules was his job. And Ares just smiles and says, no, that's my hobby.
But there was so much you want to weigh in on our Ares discussion, or?
I mean, I'm pretty sure you covered it all. I mean, basically, whenever you see that the episode is going to have one of the gods in it, you know it's going to be a great episode.
Unless it's Strife.
Well.
Yeah.
Ares, especially. Yeah. But, no, I was waiting to go on to Aphrodite.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go. But start us on Aphrodite.
Like, I don't know. Oh my goodness, she's amazing. The best part about Aphrodite is that she grows to consider Gabrielle a friend.
Yeah.
Right? She goes from totally self-indulgent, you know, another stereotype who grows out of it. Mm-hmm. And she wants to help the people that have helped her, which, what? You know, you would not expect that from her in the beginning. And then turns against her family by the end of the show to for the betterment of humans, which is not an Aphrodite thing to do based on the one we meet in season 1, 2.
Yeah, where she's
well,
causing
originally,
more.
Yeah, originally in Hercules.
Originally in Hercules, but then when you see her again in Zena, when she's causing war just so that her temples don't get destroyed.
Yeah.
Because Aphrodite. I actually, when I was doing my rewatch, I was also live tweeting my rewatch. So if anyone had ever seen my Twitter in the past few weeks, it was like hundreds of tweets about Zena. And one of the things I was remarking on is I'd also watched Clueless recently, and I'm like, man, I really want to see like an Aphrodite Clueless crossover. That would be like mega Valley Girl, and it would be amazing. But I also loved her relationship with Cupid. her and her beautiful leather-clad son, and I was just like,
played by Carl Urban. I wonder whatever happened to him. He had talent.
And I love how many other people he played on the universe
and Caesar and
he played like three characters in the show.
Caesar,
Cupid, and one of the Bible stories, Altered States. One of the weird Bible stories they made into an episode. It was that one.
It was a great Caesar, actually. That was
a fantastic Caesar. But you know, I love Aphrodite's growth. I also love her changing hair color, because there was one episode where she was decidedly more brunette than blonde. Again, I notice these weird, like, nitpicky details.
But she's a goddess. She can do whatever she wants.
Yeah, she's a goddess of beauty. Like maybe the trend was brown that day. You never know.
There was one episode where she had this really ridiculously complex cheerleader outfit with little pom-pommy things hanging off.
Because of course she did.
For one episode only.
Oh, but yeah, no, she was such a fantastic, fantastic goddess.
I wish they'd included more of her earlier on. And I really love the episode where Gabrielle falls in the water and loses his mind a little bit and becomes a mermaid.
Oh!
And that they included just about everybody. Yes.
Talk about off the rails. What? What?
But hey, it gave Ted more things to do. So yes. I was all for that.
So we've talked about a few of gods. I want to talk about some random other thematic things, like let's talk about mystical pregnancies for a second, which is my which is my least favorite trope ever.
And it was bad enough that they did it to poor Gabrielle. But then they decided to, like, surprise Xena's pregnant again now thing. And you're sitting there going, really?
Well, they were written into a corner. Because, I mean, okay, some shows when an actress becomes pregnant, they can write around it. They can, you know, make her wear bigger coats or only shoot her from the neck up. You can't do that on Xena.
I know.
Like I said, it's an action show where you've got four fight scenes per episode.
But you tried with those giant coats.
Oh, yes.
and you're sitting there going, okay, there.
But you've got to write it in.
Xena's had enough relationships that having an actual, like, pregnancy by a dude was not completely out of the question.
No.
Yeah.
But having it be like this weird mystical god pregnancy, you're sitting like going, what even is my life right now?
And the number of possible fathers were, as you said, legion, and all of which had great story possibilities. You know
and again, which again ties into the fact that, you know, she did have all these relationships, and then there was never any like slut shaming or anything.
No, never.
Yeah, no, we just kind of like, she's been with some guys and it's been awesome.
But then she still has the loves of her life.
But you've got, what the hell is Martin Sockis' character's name?
Abrius.
You got Hercules, you got Aeolus, you got Ares. You know? Ares, I mean, Greek gods were always going around impregnating women anyhow.
That could have totally been
a fantastic episode where she's overcome by the Furies and has to, sort of work her way around it. And, well, maybe Ares is her dad.
Yeah.
And Ares is like, well played. Well played. But yeah, no, I saw that and I was like, really? This is, man.
Yeah.
And then that's how we end up getting Hope, so let's have a little Hope divergence.
Do we have to?
We can't go through this without talking about Hope.
Okay.
I'm sorry. So when you're impregnated by an evil deity and you happen to have a baby, it is not necessarily out of the realm of possibility that this baby is evil.
You think?
I understand that you might have some maternal bond, but in the back of your mind, you gotta go, you know, this could be like Damien, okay? So bless your heart, Gabby, for wanting to think the best of this child.
But damn.
It's an innocent.
But damn, I mean, especially.
But it's not an innocent.
It's exactly. And especially
we're trying to take Gabby's side.
And it's like, I understand her naivety is one of the things that we love best about Gabrielle. Her willingness to see the best in people, which is one of the things that Xena prizes out of their friendship. Seriously, when the baby is one of the few people in the room and somebody ends up strangled.
But then they put like the weird like biblical story trappings around it. Like she puts the evil baby in the basket among the reeds, and I'm like, is evil baby Moses?
Hysterical fantasy.
Yeah, and I mean, when they do pull like biblical storylines out of it, it's from everywhere. Isaac and Abraham. Here, have some Jesus story. Here, have like.
My favorite is that Xena's
do we have a time period, or is it time ago?
Greg Cox used to say that Xena all took place entirely in old timey land.
maybe Argo is a TARDIS.
Yeah. Because, I mean, we did David and Goliath, a contemporary with Julius Caesar, you know.
And then there was the Bard episode where they're talking about Spartacus.
Yes!
And I was like, wait, you haven't even had the Roman Empire yet. Like, what are you doing?
And if we do, it's still Julius Caesar.
What are you doing?
My favorite biblical thing, though, is the fact that Xena was condemned to hell because an angel couldn't keep his grip on her wrist. Really? This is what redemption is based on? Whether or not the angel can actually hold on to your damn wrist?
Oh, man.
Oh, gosh.
But it's okay that she seduces Lucifer into that spot, so it's fine.
Oh,
the high public is all set. It's fine. Of all the things she's done, that's not the worst.
It's all his
fault.
Because of Hope, we're going to go back to Hope. We end up having the Rift.
I tried to change the subject.
You tried to change the subject, but I had to go back to the Rift. which is what happens to Xena and Gabby's relationship that ultimately ends in a musical episode.
Like you do.
Greetings because to those numbers.
Because as my friend on Twitter said, all lesbian arguments should result in musical numbers. And I was like, I can't argue with this.
There is a quote that is often attributed to, well, I guess Jerry Robbins changed it, but the often said in theater, when emotions get so high that you can't talk anymore, you sing. And when you can't sing anymore, you dance.
So that's how we end up with the bittersweet.
And sing and dance.
Yes.
Which again, clears the air, pulls out a lot of other, you know, kind of resolves a number of plots, including the fun times and Chin. Which is one of my favorite arcs. I loved Xena's relationship with Lao Ma. Which again, when the subtext isn't subtext.
No, that was text.
It's literal text.
That was text.
And then killing, you know, Ming Tian with the hairpin, and you're like, yeah, that was a thing, and that was amazing, and Gabby really should have understood that was totally necessary at the time.
Yeah. But
talking about betrayal.
And also, with the very obvious exception of Renee O'Connor, who lip synced very badly, there is a lot of good singers in that cast.
Kevin Smith.
Oh, yeah. Well, he came up in New Zealand theater and doing musicals and stuff. And I also got to see him perform at one of the conventions in New York where he sang. And first of all, holy crap, stage presence.
Man.
And he could sing.
But yeah, I know that was, you know, the first of two musical episodes that Xena had.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I know the bittersweet, definitely one of my all-time fave music episodes.
Yes.
Cleared the air, sealed the rift, and
because of course, after all of that dark, depressing things, that's what you need is some psychedelic musical to clear the air.
Yeah, totally. That's one of the things that Xena the show did so very well is you'd have these very dark, depressing episodes. You know, they go down some really, you know, treacherous paths, and then they balance out like an episode or two later with something incredibly ridiculous and humorous, and you're like, thank you, show, I needed that, especially since I've been marathoning it for the past 2 days.
Ooh, yeah. I liked it better when they weren't being quite so binary about it.
Yeah.
As the show went on, it became more, okay, this is a serious episode. Okay, this is a ridiculous episode.
Right.
And they were a little, I liked it better when they mixed and matched.
Yeah.
The show could have...
Yeah, for a show about so many gray areas, they were really into this kind of black and white, good and evil mentality, which
is especially funny given Xena.
And one of the things that struck me was the ultimate dichotomy between peace and war. Like, there was no middle ground.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Questions from the
let's take some questions. There are lots
There's
of people.
All these people on
Kamala Khan.
So I loved the show, and I was watching it when it was, you know, originally airing when I was like a teenager, so very formative for me. But I feel like we can still be critical of some things that we love. And as a Hindu, watching the Krishna arc was hard for me.
I think it is.
As a non-Hindu, it was hard for me, too.
Because
it was terrible.
But I'm not trying to like say, oh, this was terrible, and make the whole show terrible. And all
this stuff.
I'm just saying, like, I think they did try to address it by doing that little PSA.
Which stays with the episode on the DVD and on Netflix, yeah.
And
good.
Are we supposed to be happy with that? Like, is there any way of coming back from something like that? Like, what do you think? Do the showrunners do a good job of apologizing? Or maybe they didn't have to? Maybe it was just within this fantasy world.
So,
I really like that they did.
I like that they apologized. I like that they did kind of display that
culture. I don't
know
anything about the culture itself. Sorry. Yeah. So I can't speak to how they handled it. But I like that they acknowledged that, hey, this is a place where we really don't have a lot of knowledge. Yes, we consulted. But we hope we've done a good job of it. So at least they addressed it where... I've never seen any other show do that.
I think
of course
it's
they
really
did a pretty crap shit job of doing Greek culture too.
Yeah.
So
I think it's really, I don't know if cool is the right word, maybe forward thinking, that before they even released it, somebody thought, like, you know what, we should address this before anyone even says anything. Like they knew
to take it in such a dark place.
Yeah.
Also, it's like you could have chosen to take another route with that and
explore this whole other side of a religion and a culture, but you chose to take it in a really dark place. To have that stop and think about this before we release this, we really have to address what we're doing here.
And as a Norse pagan, I am really used to watching all of my mythologies be like completely... We're going to throw it out the window and do this thing that has the trappings of what you're doing, so that's really exciting, but no.
Yeah.
So I think it really is important that they did acknowledge the fact that they had some failings in that department, and you know, so they could have done more, but I don't know what more they could have done.
But as somebody who asked the question, how do you feel it was handled?
You know, I remember watching it, and like that little PSA came on, and I was like, okay, this is like basically setting me up to get punched in the face. And then I got punched in the face.
At least you knew it was coming.
Warned.
Like, oh, okay.
My issue with that story was more fundamental. There's a great quote from Oscar Wilde where somebody asks him, are you saying you didn't find it offensive? And Oscar Wilde said, worse, it was badly written. And that was pretty much my attitude toward that whole arc. I just thought it was a disaster on every level.
None of the religions are accurate in Xena. There is least of all their own.
When they really dive into it with both feet, they screw it up even more.
Right. But along those lines, maybe I'm a crazy person, but I think it's
somebody get that, please.
Really interesting that they're all coexisting,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's you're seeing all these
and
different
there's never
things.
A question about that, either.
Yeah, and they're all real in the Xena universe, and they can coexist. And I know that bumper sticker is kind of overdone, but I think that's like a lesson for us. You know, believe what you want to believe. And let other people believe what they want to believe, right. And there's no reason to kill each other over it.
Yeah, but the only fear is, oh, well, we don't have followers. Well, all right, you don't have followers. It doesn't mean it, that's when it doesn't exist. Okay, then nobody has anything to worry about.
Yeah, but on the other side of that, they're also in a lot of shows of that era and even beyond. There does seem to be a sort of setting up of an inevitability toward a monotheistic.
Yeah.
Which bothers the ever-living crap out of me and
me too.
Everything. Because, you know, again, you know, in a universe where everything exists and everything is real, to then say, but just letting you know, the real thing is a one-god system, FYI.
If it makes you feel any better,
the Crusades.
None of the, like, pseudo-Christian theology was anywhere near accurate either.
That no. But there was also, it was the one religion that Xena didn't question also. She was actually willing to give Eli's thing a shot, which was spectacularly out of character for her. And yes, because it just felt
you
like,
don't
okay,
think she
well, we
was
gotta
just
make
doing
sure
it for Gabrielle?
Huh?
She wasn't, you don't think she was just doing it for Gabrielle?
Or she was.
There were a lot of other things she wasn't willing to do for Gabrielle, up to and including, you know, hope.
Well, you know, there was right also, there.
Why that and not other
hey,
things, you know?
They,
I mean, it, she was.
Hope yoga.
Oh, well. Hey.
She's but willing to go just, there.
Other questions, other things you want us to talk about? Seriously, the floor is yours.
All the somebody way in the back,
Pink.
Over there.
All the way in the back, Pink. Hi.
So can we talk about how awful the final episode was?
Yeah.
Can we not? How it subverted the end of season one.
Yeah.
She wants to know about the last episode. She wants us to talk about the last episode and how terrible it was and how it subverted everything. And I'd like to forget that the last episode exists.
I know this is mainly a Xena panel, but one of the things I loved about Hercules' finale is that it ended with Hercules and Aeolus walking down the road to their next adventure.
Yeah.
That was the perfect ending for that show.
You liked Hercules.
I wish. Huh?
That's
you
why
you liked Hercules.
I liked them both. I honestly...
liked Hercules.
I honestly...
I don't want to talk about Hercules.
I don't know, but, the shows were kind of... You know, they were in the same universe, and I honestly think of them... As a single unit alongside each other.
No.
I know, and I get why some people don't. But the reason I brought it up here and specifically is that they got it so right in Hercules, they got it so wrong in Xena. For exactly what you said, you know, it subverted everything.
For sure, they spend so much time talking about how we're always going to be together, but then not be together.
However, that was from the very beginning that was supposed to be written that way. She was supposed to be killed at the end. And that
what's
is
her own redemption?
That's canon from Rom.
Yeah.
Personally.
But just because it's canon doesn't necessarily mean that we agree with their choices.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Which,
but if you don't want to use the Hercules example, the same thing happens in The Next Generation. That's why that finale is one of the best finales ever. Yes. Because they're still going, and these characters that you love are still a unit, and they're still together, and it's not ending. And when it so clearly is ending in Xena, and like you can, it's just. It is strange. It feels strange.
But it's at least it was a ballsy move to end in that.
Ballsy doesn't mean good.
It didn't really make sense.
Okay, reboot Xena is what they're talking about. What are they going to do?
I don't know. They've been talking about it, but it's
really been talked about. In the past week.
In the past few weeks, they've been going back and forth. Are they rebooting it? Are they not? And they haven't actually given any very clear direction on what they're doing. And I've been kind of keeping an eagle eye on that.
Lucy won't be involved.
Yeah, Lucy, which is a crying shame because she is a fantastic actress who still looks fantastic. Mm-hmm. She still
so
looks
Renee.
The part. Yeah, Renee, they still look amazing. So it's like, if you want to kind of... I would love to have more shows like Xena as, 1990s Xena.
Right.
And we need some kick-ass older ladies on TV.
Yeah. And there's so many things you could do with Lucy and Renee now that would be fantastic.
And by older, I mean older than 25.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that it's important for women and girls because again, I watched Xena when it was airing on TV in my early teens. And it was very important for me to see that. I feel like that so many of the shows that are on these days are about boys' journeys, men's journeys. Like you're looking at Arrow and The Flash. Like these are the genre shows that are up. And the closest we're getting right now is bringing the Supergirl show.
What about Agent Carter?
And we're getting Agent Carter.
Mm-hmm.
And
we're only getting in tiny doses.
So we're only getting them in like tiny doses. And I think that girls need Xena.
Xena was on the air at one of the best times for female characters in genre television. You had Xena, you had Buffy, you had Aaron's Son, you had Dana Scully, you had Claudia Ivanova on Battle on 5, you had Kira Nerys, you had Jadzia Dax, you had all these really great female characters, and we're not seeing them in genre television outside of one or two. We've got Agent May and Agent Carter, and that's about it.
Black—that's like 12 of them right there.
Yeah,
Black. Yeah. We do have Orphan Black.
Orphan Black.
Orphan Black is glaring. Awesome.
And, but what's frustrating about Orphan Black is that it's so exceptional. Whereas 20 years ago, it was much more the norm, and I miss that. I miss having.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we're all pretty much around the same generation, right? Yeah. So Xena was pretty freaking formative. I mean, rewatching it. Just for this coming in, I was like, wait, when was this made? This was 1995?
Yes, it was.
And Xena's saying, nobody can tell Gabrielle what to do. She's the one who makes the decisions for herself. Yeah. 1995, find me that today.
Yeah. No, one of my favorite moments is they're rescuing girls from being sold into slavery. One young woman who's feeling like she is feeling like downtrodden, down in the dumps. And Gabby says to her, "None of what happened was your fault." And I was just like, that came out in 1996, okay? How many shows these days, even Law & Order SVU, how often do you really get to see people actually say that about someone who's potentially a rape survivor? And you don't. And that is just, again, it was so very progressive for its time, and we haven't gone back to that. Like, we just kind of took a few steps backwards, and it's just terrifying that we haven't gone forward from that. And we had a hand up over there.
Yeah, like both my sister and I grew up watching like Conan and then going on to watching Hercules and Sinbad, and when we saw the previews, like I was still in elementary school and I was so psyched. Like we were counting down the days until it aired, and when that theme music was on, it's still in my head and I'll sing it when I'm like baby or something. putting my clothes on. And it just pumps you up, and it was a really good influence. And then with all the other female sort of representatives, it was just such an empowering show. And, you know, like, you go to school and we're going to talk about Xena. Like, yeah. It's badass to talk about Xena. And you're just like, yeah, I watched that episode. Yeah. I watched every episode.
That's what you were saying before about Sunday school.
It's a badge of honor.
I want to actually give a shout out to John Shuley and the guy who did the music for both shows. Mm-hmm. Who did the theme song was just amazing,
yep.
And the music in general on both shows was just superb. And a lot of the texture of what made the show as visually and hourly.
And they keep it.
And then I think even soon we were talking about, like, you noticed.
Yeah, I was like, they don't change the opening credits at all until season 6.
I was like, yes!
They're all from, like, the first 4 episodes because that's when they had to make the title sequence.
The only thing, they changed Renee's visual.
Yeah, they give a little shot.
The image of her changed. As she did,
but yeah, there was and one of the things I also noticed about, like, especially in the first season's music, the first volume is predominantly female voices.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't until you got, like, Dayhawk and the Deliverer theme that you actually got male voices on the soundtrack. So I think
and
it was,
a lot of Celtic music,
but a lot of Celtic music. But
towards the end, it changed from just vocalizing to, like, oh, Xena. Yeah. It's hilarious. Seriously, go Xena. It's so
okay,
funny.
So we have a
show about Greeks filming in New Zealand with Celtic and Bulgarian music.
Can we give a shout out to the King of
Thieves?
Oh, yes!
Yeah. All right.
That's so we have, no we the, we had
Sorry,
a discussion.
We gotta do it right. The King of Thieves.
We had a discussion on Facebook leading up to this about Autolycus, which led to the idea that we want to do a Jack of All Trades panel next year.
Yes.
Just saying. Anyway, Autolycus.
Let's talk a little bit about Autolycus, our King of Thieves, who is brilliantly played by the amazing, multi-talented, fan-freaking-tastic Bruce Campbell.
And his performing chin.
And his performing chin. And amazing facial hair.
Yes.
Yeah, that mustache is a legend in and of itself.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed him as a character. He was always so much fun to watch with Xena. They have such great chemistry.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons.
Such understanding. And they don't try to change one another.
Yeah,
no.
They just let each other excel at what they do.
He's a beep. Yeah.
You did a good
Xena. Yes. Too.
Yes.
Yeah,
that was
yeah.
I mean, if you're gonna let somebody take over your body, really?
She accepted him for who he was, right?
Yeah.
And when she got into a situation that she realized she needed his help, she had no problem bringing him in.
Yeah.
And then they had there was that episode where we get to hear more of Autolycus' backstory, which apparently is, like, one of the least favorite episodes that they ever did. Which involves the statue of Pax.
Yeah.
But it was very interesting that, you know, we get to hear, you know, more of Autolycus' backstory, get to hear about how his brother was killed by this jerk, and that's why he became a thief. And he does get that kind of choice to make for himself. Am I going to kill this guy and resort to murder, which is something I find abhorrent, and especially when he was dealing with Joxer's brother, Jet.
Right.
The Joxer brother. Okay. That episode was really poorly written. But it did have some good moments with Autolycus making the choices that are best for him. And never straying from his thieving ways, because he is damn good at what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And he enjoys it.
Except for when he watches out for Gabrielle and Xena, like, when he purposefully gets captured, and he is trying to explain, no, this is where he's meant to be, and Gabby just won't listen.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, the shipwreck. No, he's currently locked up with, like, 200 different locks and stuff. Do we want to go get him? No, he'd hate me forever if I ruined this for him. Yeah, they were very understanding about Autolycus and all of his Autolycus-ness.
Yes. We're running out of time.
We're running low on time.
Oh, right, Salmonius, yes. I actually want to say something about Salmonius quickly, because it irritated me. And if you watch the two-parter on Hercules, Salmonius has as much to do with Xena's redemption as Hercules does in that story. Later on Xena, Herc gets a lot of credit, Gabrielle gets a lot of credit. Does she mention Salmonius? But he actually played a much bigger role than in that original two-parter in her redemption, particularly in part 2 of the storyline. And that, I always thought that was unfair. I mean, Salmonius was a ridiculous character.
Yeah.
But although Bob Trevor is a really nice guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Wrap up?
Let's do a wrap up. We're going to do a quick wrap up.
We should bring the cosplayers.
The cosplayers up. They have final thoughts. Final thoughts, anyone?
Final thoughts. Rewatch Xena. Don't try and do it in 5 weeks.
or me, Rosia, don't try and do it in less than 5 weeks. Also, shout out to the great, fantastic beauty pageant episode.
Oh, oh yeah.
God.
The wonderfully feminist beauty Miss pageant Artifice? Episode.
Yeah.
Miss Artifice? So when they don't play Miss Artifice for laugh, like serious laughs, they just play her for kind of chuckles.
It's a little transphobic at times.
But it was
but 1995, it's pretty damn great.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
He's a real nice guy, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was Chad Michaels at first, but Chad was too young then. Yeah, yeah, it's not.
No, it was some New Zealand.
Yeah. All right. No, I will disagree and say, go ahead and watch it. 5 weeks. Marathon through. It's definitely, I mean, I know a lot of us watched it growing up, but definitely go back and rewatch it on Netflix and Hulu. And important, because these ladies figured it out and I didn't even notice, that there are two episodes that you cannot get on Netflix that you have to watch on Hulu.
Yeah, two episodes from season 5.
Really?
Or you could just
yes.
Them. Sorry, you could just
because we assume because of music rights.
Oh,
yeah, because
okay,
of music rights.
Yeah. Hulu is still sort of considered.
Yeah. So after this, so when I get back home, I'll start rewatching Xena again. I'll be going through seasons 4 through 6, and I'll be live tweeting them for more hilarious.
I did not grow up watching Xena because I was already a grown up when it because I'm old and
Hercules.
Why like
stand back.
I've watched all of them. I liked all of them, but now I want to rewatch it because it's been a while.
Yeah.
and then this panel has actually made me really, really want to rewatch it. So
okay, well, thank you guys for showing up. We're gonna get some cosplayers for some pictures.
Cosplayers, would you come up in the corner if you want to do photo shoots? Thank you. Rate us in the app.
Anomaly. Anomaly. Anomaly.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental News, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the @ Anomaly Podcast. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly Supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. That's anomalypodcast.com. The theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at marioncall.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's MarianCall. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License.
Anomaly. 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 Anomaly.
Hi, Gary.
You guys want to hear the rest of my Cat Jotzer song?
Yes.
Lena the kitty sleeps in the yellow chair, getting black for everywhere, with Oswin as her sidekick. They run and jump and sway and kick, eating snacks and taking naps. She is one kitty cat. She's Lena. She's Lena the kitty.